to help everybody understand how significant of an event's coming up in January in Las Vegas, where it's the Electric City. And, yeah, they're going to have some electricity going on there. His name is Dave Talbot. Liam, why don't you introduce him?
Right. Dave Talbot is a long-term researcher into – now, you people out there with a great interest in the history of the sciences will know the Velikovsky controversy. Now, Emmanuel Velikovsky came forward a number of decades ago and said, sorry, but the astronomical model we have is incorrect. Venus – flew by. It was a comet. It had a hairy magnetic tail flying all over and charging and scouring the planet, and Mars had to pass by, and people said, you're crazy. Nobody could prove him wrong, and a number of the things that he predicted about the heat of certain planets, why something like Venus would be so hot if it were just like every other planet, why all the planets have different axial tilts. In other words, they're all tilted a different direction. They all had a different place of birth. All of these came into a place of fascination and study by the Velikovskians, the people who followed him.
Yeah.
Now, this, I think, converged with another field of research called plasma physics, and they said, holy mackerel, wait a second. You're saying that all of outer space is an electrically charged plasma. So then we look at the interaction between planets, and everything we think we know, we actually have to throw out. I think the guy carrying the torch for this more than any other that I know of or that I've seen is named David Talbot, and he's on the line with us.
Very cool.
From the West. Dave, you there?
Yes, sir. Hi, guys.
Hey, welcome to the Robert Scott Bell Show with Larry. This is
very glad to be here.
Well, did I get any of that right, Dave? This. Was any of that correct? Did I get any of that right?
No, you were wrong on everything. That was very good, Liam.
All right, because his head was getting really big. We need to knock him down to size. Thank you, David. That was great.
So,
Velikovsky, great question. We can get to him early, perhaps, because he was an inspiration to several people in our group.
Mm-hmm. So go for it. What were some of these crazy ideas that are now coming? And by the way, this is all in preparation for a conference in Las Vegas on January 6th through 8th. And if you go to thunderbolts.info, you'll see all the information that you need. But Dave, if I said to you the things that the ancient Greeks and Babylonians and Sumerians and Incas and Mayans all saw in the sky, they all saw similar stuff in the sky. And you have a particular way to look at that that's different than, I think, most comparative mythologists.
Yes, I do. The heart of it is this. There is actually bedrock. When we think of myth, we actually assume what we're seeing on the surface is representative of the substructure of myth as a whole, and it's not. There's a radical difference between the clutter that you see on the surface of myth and what I have called the points of agreement between the different cultures. The fact is that all of the great myths evolved over thousands of years. That gave every culture a chance to get things increasingly confused. Additionally, they were using different words and symbols to describe the same things. Now, how do you get that substructure to shine through? The same things being experienced around the world. Well, what you do is you look past the surface confusion to the points of agreement between the different cultures. And the most amazing discovery is that there are hundreds of these points of agreement. I mean, just take the most elementary things first. Every culture knew that the world was once a much different place. They all knew that there was a former lost golden age. They knew that that golden age ended in horrific catastrophe, and out of those events, the entire order of the heavens changed. Now, that's just the beginning. That's like maybe a half a dozen easily identified themes that occur in virtually every culture. But if you continue, you find that each of those themes has nuances that are also universal. The Golden Age was ruled over by a central sun, a stationary luminary in the sky, the father of kings. Now, the central sun ruling from the celestial pole. Now, these are incredibly precise themes the closer you look, and they are global. So the point is that the mythic archetypes, which we think of in vague terms, you know, oh, there was a mother goddess, oh, there's the journey of the hero. But no, the mother goddess is a very, very well-developed theme if you actually work to reconstruct it looking only at the points of agreement. For example, it is an amazing fact that amongst the planets as a whole, five visible planets, there's only one that stands out as the Mother Goddess around the world. Well, you don't believe in accidents once you get into these specifics. Does that make sense?
And
there
what
are
was,
no accidents
and what was the,
at the level of the archetypes.
And Dave, what was the Mother Goddess planet, and how does that relate to what we see in the sky and maybe what happened?
Well, the Mother Goddess is universally identified with the planet Venus. And what I'm suggesting is that that cannot be accidental, because there are five planets in the sky, and there's nothing in the planet Venus as it appears today that would make that planet look particularly feminine, shall we say?
Right.
Or in the same way, nothing in the behavior of the planet Mars makes it look masculine. But where is a culture that didn't identify Mars as a great warrior in the sky?
Right.
Try to find an example of Mars that is feminine.
Interesting.
So the more you get a feeling that there is this substructure, the more your confidence goes up that if I only allow in the universal points of agreement, I will be discovering a unified substructure of human memory.
All right, Liam.
And that is exactly what has been revealed through this reconstruction.
Right, and this is what the work of Thunderbolts looks at mythologically. So we have the substructure. Now, what Dave is talking about are you take all of the myths from all over the world and you analyze them. You say, you have a Mother Goddess. They all identify it with the same planet in the sky. Now, if this sounds too, well, mythical, what you have to do is reconstruct it as not a crime scene, but you have to look at the evidence of where the planets are, and you have to look at Venus, and then you have to... Now, the interesting thing is, Dave will tell you in his work, as will Wal Thornhill, as will Donald
we
Scott...
We had Wal on, what, last week?
Last week. That all of what is predicted from this advanced, let me say, this amended Velikovskian model... is actually what's in evidence. Venus actually has electromagnetic streamers, like hairs of a dragon streaming off of it. And NASA will say so, and that we're bathed in the electromagnetic streamers of the planets. That and Dave and his group have been able to recreate on a small scale what they predict happens when large charged bodies get near each other in space. Now, just for comparison's sake, NASA has a model of the universe that says, number one, there's dark matter, which is invisible peanut butter, which you can't see, which you can't measure.
That's the thing I made fun of, dark matter.
Right, which doesn't exist, because it doesn't exist, and they hold the universe together with dark matter. Then you have black holes, because you have these power centers, and all you have is gravity, so that must be invisible power coming from an invisible space monster, but wait a second.
Or the colored duct tape, they make it in all colors now.
The electromagnetic universe says, wait a second, everybody...
Yes.
It's an electromagnetic universe, and the power that moves planets and makes them give off large electromagnetic currents when they pass by each other, which is what they get into in this mythological stuff that Dave's talking about, also defines what suns are. And Dave, I think there's a conference, you're holding a conference on the electromagnetic nature of the sun, the transistor capacity of the sun on the
yes,
first day
indeed.
Of the conference.
And that actually does deserve an exclamation point, because there's been so much investigation of the sun over decades now. And the fact is, I mean, this is an extraordinary fact. There is no line of reasoning that you can identify from the supposed nuclear furnace at the core of the sun to any observed attribute of the sun. Now, you have to actually pause and reflect on that. You mean there is nothing we see in the behavior of the sun that follows logically from the nuclear fusion model? And the answer is nothing.
That's true. That's right.
And yet, in 60 years of peer-reviewed research, there has never been an article that questioned the nuclear fusion model of the sun. 60 years. There has never been a peer-reviewed article published that proposed an electrical alternative. And now we are seeing from every corner of space this relentless flow of surprises, all pointing to what? Electricity. Every surprise, essentially every surprise that we are encountering since the beginning of the space age involves a pointer to electricity. Yet it is like the momentum of prior beliefs putting up this wall that prevents the people most responsible for stating the ideas that come out of discovery. they cannot see electricity. But this is changing now, happily. This is actually changing now. You know, it was only a few months ago that I was just doing a little posting on our forum, the Thunderbolts forum, and I stated the distinguishing attribute of the electric universe as electric currents across cosmic distances. And we had one of the best known debunkers out there come right onto that thread on the forum and say, yes, yes, we now know that electric currents do move across cosmic distances in space. Well, this isn't a small thing.
No, no.
This is like giving up the ghost of the old theory of the electrically neutral universe.
That, well, they had the gravity-only universe because, as Walt Thornhill has so, I think, brilliantly pointed out in his wonderful essays, they worshipped at the feet of a true genius, Isaac Newton. But Isaac Newton lived in the era before electricity, and so did Immanuel Kant, who sort of invented, along with some other people, the accidental gravity collapse model of solar systems and so on and so forth. So they've been working on this ad hoc, let's throw a little bit more into the gravity trash compactor and see what we get. And now it's all coming apart because the tools we have, that NASA has to measure outer space, do return this result. Electricity flows everywhere.
If I may, you know, people ask, well, what are the practical applications, implications of all of this? Because, you know, we hear about the sun as a burning nuclear fuel. It'll run out someday. And now, you know, Liam brings up on the air here and confirmed by Wall and you that the sun is actually hotter on the outside, far from its surface, as opposed to inside where you think it would. You know, there's a lot of bizarre things that are being uncovered and veils of illusion that are being lifted and consensus that is being dropped. And how do we apply
exactly
this practically? Is it
this?
About, if I may ask, Dave, is it about getting tang from the astronauts?
Well, you know, the value of this discovery of the electric universe actually is incredibly broad. And we can find the answers at virtually every dimension of our culture if we just pose the question. For example, what's the implication for education? We spend billions on education. Well, the implication is that we go back to the drawing board. We got the picture of the universe wrong. We got the picture of solar system history wrong. Hmm. We got the picture of human history wrong. So this is not a small matter. One thing that has become increasingly clear to me is that as people begin to explore the electric universe, they are actually stunned to discover how well it meets them at the level of their deepest interests. Mm. This will not be immediately obvious, more often than not, as they're just hearing some of the chatter about the electric universe. They may think it's just kind of an interesting theoretical abstraction. No, this is actually as deep a question as can be asked. What is the most important fact for a scientist to know? Well, I could give several that just rise to the top. One is that electricity is incomparably more active in the universe than we were ever taught in school.
Right. That it's the center of life.
There are others. I mean, for me, just because of the focus of my life's work, the single most important thing for a scientist to know is what the ancients experienced. Hmm. He won't be able to hold on to any of the dogma of the past century once he sees what the ancient world experienced. So these are sweeping. Now, people have religious convictions, they have ideological and philosophical convictions, and essentially everything will have to be thrown into doubt and reconsidered.
Isn't that fascinating?
I mean, that does touch on the kind of inherited beliefs that found their way into our institutionalized religions.
Right.
We have to begin distinguishing between the spiritual content of a religious tradition
and
the myths masquerading as the word of God. Well,
wow.
This is a scary thing for many people.
Yes, it is. I mean,
but
this
it's absolutely the most liberating experience that we could possibly
enjoy. Well, the pursuit of facts, if you will, what we want to do is let them take us where they'll take us. But the dogma, of course, restricts that. Go ahead, Liam.
Well, and we, you know, beyond re-educating all of us in letting us know that we really don't know a thing about the universe, people want to shrug their shoulders or they say, well, it's too much. Wouldn't you rather know at least know the truth? And if the truth is that we're not telling the truth, then that's the beginning of it. Also, if we have been blowing things up and melting them down to make electricity, if we burn nuclear fuel to make steam to turn a turbine, and the universe is flowing through with electricity, with charged particles all the time at will.
Are we saying Nikola Tesla was onto something?
Aren't we wasting aren't we just at the beginning of understanding the world?
Yes.
And don't we? I really, you know, the enthusiasm that Dave is expressing, I actually share. This is the most exciting scientific discovery.
This is thrilling.
This is the center.
What's the nature of that excitement? I think it actually is important for us to diagnose why it is that as people come into this circle, as people show up at our conferences, there is this palpable inspiration. Mm-hmm. Now, it's an enthusiasm that just doesn't quit. Now, and I've had a lot of opportunity to reflect on that because it is so prevalent today. And it has gradually become clear to me it is the natural human response to drawing closer to the truth on the most fundamental questions.
Dave, how can we get people there?
Yeah, exactly. Dave, we're about out of time here. We've got links up to thunderbolts.info as well as the conference itself. We want to make sure everybody understands. That's why we wanted to have you on as well as Wall last week, because there is so much going on that the old media is not going to focal point on and let people know about. This is life-changing
stuff. 6th through January 8th, this 2012, the year the universe does not end.
You want an excuse to go to Vegas. This is it.
At the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, a three-day conference presenting speakers from all over the spectrum. If you're a science fiction fan, if you're an artist, if you're a movie maker, if you are a biologist, you must go to this conference.
Dave Talbot,
and all of the best of the Electric Universe movement will be there, and that's starting at the top with Wal Thornhill and Don Scott.
And they tell me
this is a breakthrough year for us.
And they tell me all fans of the Robert Scott Bell Show, if you want to meet Liam Sheff in person, sorry, we're going to make sure somehow he gets there. I heard it from Dave.
Hooker by crook.
Liam is going to be there.
All right. You heard it from Dave Talbot. Thank you, Dave, for being on board the Robert Scott Bell Show today. Fascinating is an understatement.
Thank you, sir.